Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya. Jaya Vishnu Paramahansa Paraja Kacharya Alpha CCVDC Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jaya Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Paramsagaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidhveda Gadadha Asho Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrindiki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopita Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Sri Vrindavan Dhan Ki Jai Govardhan Ki Jai Ganga Jamona Tarasi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindiki Jai Simavetta Bhakta Vrindiki Jai Gopremanandi All glories to Sam and the Bodhis, all glories to Sam and the Bodhis, all glories to Sam and the Bodhis. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutade Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswata Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 Chapter 16 Verse 3 Ajahara Swamedam Strin Gangayam Bhuri Dakshinam Saradvatam Gurum Kritva Deva Yatrakshi Gochara Yeah. Ajahara, perform asamedha, horse sacrifices. Trin, three. Gangayam, the bank of the Ganges. Budhi, sufficiently. Dakshinan, rewards. Saradvatam, unto Kripacharya. Gurum, spiritual master. Kritva, having selected. Deva, the demigods. Yatra, wherein. Akshi, eyes. Gochara, within their purview. Translation: Maharaj Parikshit, after having selected Kripacharya for guidance as his spiritual master, performed three horse sacrifices on the banks of the Ganges. These were executed with sufficient rewards for the attendants. And at these sacrifices, even the common man could see demigods. Purport: It appears from this verse that interplanetary travel by the denizens of higher planets is easy. In many statements in Bhagavatam, we have observed that the demigods from heaven used to visit this earth to attend sacrifices performed by influential kings and emperors. Herein also we find that during the time of the horse sacrifice ceremony of Maharaj Parikshit, the demigods from other planets were visible even to the common man due to the sacrificial ceremony. The demigods are not generally visible to common men, as the Lord is not visible, but as the Lord by his causeless mercy descends to be visible to the common man, similarly, the demigods also become visible to the common man by their own grace. Although celestial beings are not visible to the naked eyes of the inhabitants of this earth, it was due to the influence of Maharaj Parikshit that the demigods also agreed to be visible. The kings used to spend lavishly during these sacrifices as a cloud distributes rains. A cloud is nothing but another form of water. In other words, the waters of the earth transform into clouds. Similarly, the charity made by the kings in such sacrifices are but another form of the taxes collected from the citizens. But as the rains fall down very lavishly and appear to be more than necessary, the charity made by such kings also seems to be more than what the citizen needs. Satisfied citizens will never organize agitation against the king, and thus there was no need in changing the monarchical state. Even for a king like Maharaj Parikshit, there was need of a spiritual master for guidance. Without such guidance, one cannot make progress in spiritual life. The spiritual master must be bona fide, and one who wants to have self-realization must approach and take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master to achieve real success. Translation: Maharaj Parikshit, after having selected Kripacharya for guidance as his spiritual master, performed 3 horse sacrifices on the banks of the Ganges. These were executed with sufficient rewards for the attendants, and at these sacrifices even the common man could see the demigods. So as was the custom, these great kings performed horse sacrifices. We see that was the case of Yudhisthira also, and many other kings. They involved in horse sacrifices and other types of sacrifices. Of course, we see in the discussion of the Chankazi with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points out that in Kali Yuga, such sacrifices are forbidden. And he quotes from some Smriti Shastra, or a compilation of rules of Smriti, I think it's Raghunandan's work, to show that these animal sacrifices, like cow sacrifices, are not permitted in Kali Yuga. At the same time, we see these great kings were doing these sacrifices. This, of course, was before Kali Yuga. Even so, we could always ask, well, why is a Vaishnav doing a horse sacrifice or a cow sacrifice or whatever? Why do they want to kill animals? Huh? So we should understand that such sacrifices are part of one portion of the Vedas, which is considered to be the lower section. So we have a whole section of the Vedas called Karmakanda. We have another section called Gyanakanda, another section called the Upasana Kanda. So in the Karma Kanda section, we have many sacrifices and other rituals to get material benefits and get promoted to higher planetary systems. So that's why in our 10 offenses of the holy name, we consider the chanting of Hare Krishna as not the same as these type of material activities. Of course, these material activities are a little more elevated than normal material activities, because at least you get to a heavenly planet. Normal activities we do in the material world just lead to karma, and we don't go to the spiritual world or to the upper planets. We end up on Earth or in a lower planetary system. But these activities in the Vedas elevate you upwards. So that's their purpose in one sense. At the same time, they're all material. And some of them involve these animal sacrifices, which as Vaishnavas we don't consider very proper. So these are a lower part of the Vedas. Prabhupada explains in some places that we shouldn't eat meat, we shouldn't kill animals and eat the flesh. But some people can't give up the eating of meat. So the Vedas give them some prescription, like worshipping Kali and offering goats to Kali, and then they can take that meat. So there is some restriction on the eating of meat. They have to go through a certain process of offering to Kali. So in the Vedic literature, for the people of lower consciousness who are attached to material life and meat eating, etc., then they have all these provisions for eating meat, and therefore they have these ceremonial ways in which they kill the animal. Lord Chaitanya, of course, explains that though it appears to be violent, ultimately the animal sacrifice gets benefit by that sacrifice, and they get promoted to a higher species if the sacrifice is done properly. So therefore, though it is violent, at the same time the animals get some benefit from it. However, we see that animal sacrifices are not encouraged in Kali Yuga. One reason, of course, is that the sacrifices cannot be performed properly. These elaborate sacrifices performed by the kings require a lot of wealth and a lot of expertise in executing. So therefore, people in Kali Yuga don't have the wealth, nor do they have the expertise to carry out such a sacrifice, and therefore they won't get the results from it. So therefore they will not get any benefit, and the animal also will not get any benefit from such a sacrifice in Kali Yuga. And of course, it is belonging to this lower section of the Vedas, and as Vaishnavas, we're not really concerned about any of that. And in Kali Yuga, we're advising everyone simply to attain the supreme goal of prema in the spiritual world. So therefore, we reject all of this. Some people were attached to such things, and we find even a Buddha appeared in order to stop the excessive animal sacrifices. So he went to an extreme measure of rejecting the whole Vedas to do that. We see that there are some personalities who oppose such activities also. And the reason is, it's a lower prescription. It's not the highest prescription of the scriptures. So it's a lower type of thing. And it can be exploited unnecessarily by the people of Kali Yuga. So therefore, these sacrifices are actually forbidden in Kali Yuga. Of course, we do see throughout the world there are such things. We see in the Bible, for instance, they had sacrifices also, animal sacrifices, and other religions also have such things. We can't criticize the Vedas for having such sacrifices, because we see them in most religions of the world. As Vaishnavas, we reject all of this instead follow a completely different path. That is, we don't follow Karma Kanda. We don't even follow Jnana Kanda. We follow Bhakti. Some people, of course, attack the Vedas because they say you're trying to be non-violent, but look, the Vedas show sacrifices and animals getting killed, etc. Even Shankaracharya was opposed to the animal sacrifices. So I think it was he that introduced a new method. He didn't want to change the Vedas. Nevertheless, he was opposed to killing animals. So that he said, instead of the animal, you make a model animal out of dough. Get some flour mixed into a thing and make a shape like an animal, and you sacrifice that animal on the fire instead. So he gave a substitute for the actual killing of an animal. You make a animal out of dough and you sacrifice that. So that was an attempt also to get rid of the violence and the sacrifices. So in general, as Vaishnavas, we don't even do such sacrifices because we're not interested in material promotion or heavenly planets. So therefore we disregard all of these such things. So Prabhupada mentions here at the very beginning of the purport that, it looks like the devatas can very easily travel all over the planetary systems, and they can come down to earth, because it is said here in the last line that even the common people could see the devatas at this time, because they appeared at the sacrifice of Parikshit Maharaj, which means that the sacrifice was done very properly. And therefore, the devatas were pleased, because sacrifices are generally done by invoking devatas. Agni takes, who is the fire, and the sacrifice. He carries the sacrificial offering to the devatas. That, so to speak, is their food, and they are pleased with that. So if the sacrifice is not done properly, the devatas don't get anything, and Agni doesn't carry anything, so therefore the devatas are not pleased. But if they get the offerings properly, then the devatas are very pleased, and if they're pleased, then they may actually show themselves in the sacrifice. So therefore they showed themselves to Parikshit, and all the, not only Parikshit, but all the people there, they could see the devatas. So normally the devatas cannot be seen by human beings because they're different. They have different types of bodies, we can't see those bodies. Nevertheless, if they want, they can make themselves visible by some means, just as the Supreme Lord is impossible to be seen by any material eye, but he comes as avatar and then he becomes visible. So we can see him. So that's his will. By his will, he can make himself visible somehow or other to our eyes. So similarly, the devatas, who are not actually spiritual beings, unlike the Lord, they have material bodies. So they can also appear to the human being, even though human being generally cannot see them because his eyes are quite different and he can't perceive the matter that the devatas' bodies are made out of. But anyway, they can make some adjustment and become visible to the human beings also. So therefore, they can travel here at will if they so want to. Prabhupada mentions in another place that actually in Kali Yuga, the devatas don't want to come here. Why would they come here in Kali Yuga? It is like a latrine. Why do they go to the latrine? Because it's full of sinful activities. So in Kali Yuga, generally, devatas are not going to appear. Yeah? But in previous ages, because of the sacrifices and the piety of the people and the good management of the kings, etc., the devatas often would be attracted to appearing within the material world. But in Kali Yuga, no, they won't even appear. So therefore, we have much less chances of seeing them under normal circumstances. So when it says that the devatas appear, this means that actually the kingdom was ruled properly. And the king was executing his duties properly, including doing the sacrifices that were expected from a king. So therefore, the devatas became visible to the human beings. So by this we understand that our perception is very limited. Devatas are material. Their planets are material. But we can't see them. What to speak of seeing the spiritual world or the body of the Supreme Lord, which are completely different. So even we cannot see parts of the material world. We cannot see Svargaloka. We cannot see Tapaloka or Brahmaloka, even though they're material. So our eyes are very, very limited. We see things on Earth planet, just around us particularly. We can't even see the next Varsha. We have 9 Varshas on our little island called Jambudweep. We can't even see the next Varsha. There's a huge mountain in the middle, Mount Meru, which is many, many times bigger than the whole Earth planet. We can't see that mountain. So many things we cannot see which are material. So, and this is only on Bhumandala, our particular level. So above that we got the Bhuvarloka and Svargaloka and Mahaloka and Janaloka and Tapaloka and Brahmaloka. We can't see any of that. Very, very little. Of course, what we can see is, we see stars in the sky, and we see planets like the sun and the moon, etc. But we actually don't see the real Svarga, the heavenly sphere. We can't enter into that sphere and see the devatas and see their enjoyment on Svargaloka. So our vision is very, very limited. So what to speak of seeing these devatas, impossible to see the Supreme Lord or the spiritual world. So the devatas are on a higher level, but then if they want to, they can manifest themselves as they did here in time of Parikshit. So they do have special powers, but even now they could come, impossible. But they don't want to come. What is the use of coming? There's nothing attractive to see here. So why would they come? So therefore, they don't show themselves. So we may puzzle over these statements about devatas or Svargaloka or other higher planetary systems where they have great enjoyment, because in the modern world we have a particular science which tells us there's nothing there. nothing on the moon, nothing on Mars. They sent a rover up to Mars and takes photographs of some rocks there, whatever. But all those planets, Mars and Venus and Mercury and Saturn and Jupiter and the Sun and the Moon, are considered to be Svargaloka, where the devatas reside, these very privileged beings. But science tells us nothing there, some old rocks. And I guess Mars is very hot, maybe. I don't know what the temperature is. I know Venus is supposed to be very cold and icy and everything like that, and Jupiter and Saturn very far away from the Sun, so they're all just freezing, minus 100 or something, below zero or whatever. I don't know what it is. Very, very cold up there. So what's the possibility of life, they say? But on the other hand, the Vedic literature tells, no, Svargaloka, full of wonderful things. People have special bodies and they live for thousands and thousands of years, and they're enjoying like anything and whatever. So quite different. Yeah? So therefore, when people, even devotees, read the Bhagavatam, sometimes they get a little confused by these descriptions of higher spheres and the within the universe, which is material, what to speak of spiritual world. So because we can't see the spiritual world at all, nobody claims to do that, but we can see parts of the material world, or we can send a rover up to Mars and see that, or take pictures of the moon, whatever. So they say, well, look, it's quite different. It's not Svargaloka, it's rocks, some dry rocks and some dust. So the problem is that our perception is very limited. And even if we go to the moon or whatever, we don't have the ability to enjoy the place because we don't have the proper body, we don't have the proper eyes, we don't have the proper senses. So therefore, we don't see the devatas. If the devatas come to earth as they did here, then somehow they adjust so that we can see them. But even the people then were different than we are now. They had some more punya, so they had some higher ability to see also. But if one forcibly tries to go there, to go to the higher planetary systems, then we don't see anything. They won't show themselves, and we don't have the qualification to see those worlds or those beings at all. So therefore, we should not be too attached to thinking of reality as limited by what science tells us in terms of this Earth and other planets, etc. Yeah, that's there also, but there is higher levels of existence in terms of material world, not even spiritual, even material world, which we cannot see. So in order to enjoy those heavenly planets, then you have to have special qualifications, special senses, special body, etc. One way of doing it is by getting another body. And the only way you can get that body is by doing these sacrifices and punyas, and you can raise yourself upwards and get another body by good karma on another planetary system, then you can enjoy very nicely. If you don't do that, then even if you try to go there, you won't see anything. So we saw in the story of in Ramchandra's Leela, Ravana was so foolish that he thought, let's go to the upper planets, let's go to Svargaloka by building a staircase. So that's something like the modern people going to the moon with a spaceship, or going to Mars with a rover. You can use material means, but you're not going to get there even if you think you're there, because you won't participate in those pastimes or those enjoyments, because you don't have the punya, you don't have the right body to do so. You're not of the proper consciousness. So in this way, if you want to go, you have to do the right things, get that body and go there. So that's one way of going there, by punyas. So within the material world, there are many places like this, and therefore the whole universe is divided up into layers, so to speak. Lower consciousness and higher consciousness. So one layer in the middle, more or less, we got our Earth sphere, Bhumandala. Then we got upper planets, gradually finer and finer and finer and finer in consciousness. More and more and more pure, pure sattva, 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 as you go up to Svargaloka and Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka. The material energy gets finer and finer and more sattvic. And you go lower, lower, it gets more tamasic down to hellish planets. And perceive those things with our particular eyes and our particular body. If we raise our consciousness up, yeah, then we can see those things. But generally it takes another body and another lifetime through punyas to raise yourself up. Therefore, impossible for us to actually experience those levels. So these levels are described in the Bhagavatam. We have devatas and higher living entities and even Brahma at the very top, all of whom are invisible to us. So that's because their consciousness is much higher and their bodies are higher also. And we cannot access that with our particular body and our particular senses. We shouldn't disbelieve the descriptions that are given in the Bhagavatam of entities on higher planets and whatever with particular types of bodies. So the point here is that Parikshit, because of his purity, his ideal conduct as a king, he was able to even attract the devatas down, even though they're on a higher level. They would very willingly come down and become visible on the earth because of the purity of the place. In other words, even though it wasn't on a lower level, by his rulership it became like a heavenly planet. So therefore they're willing to come. On the other hand, you see, as Kali Yuga progressed, then that leadership was lost and earth planet became more degraded, so therefore we don't expect any devatas to come here at the present time. So Prabhupada mentions here at the end of the purport how the ideal kings ruled in such a way that it was sufficient materials for everybody. Nobody was lacking in any way. So that was the sign of the efficient rulership of the king. And that included doing all the duties properly, and part of those duties was to do these sacrifices. This obligation of the king to carry out sacrifices, etc. And we see that as the case of others as well. So even Ambarish, who was very great devotee of the Lord, he was obliged to do all these sacrifices, etc. as well. But he had no interest in them. So he assigned it all to his ministers to carry out, and he just worshipped the Lord and did his bhakti. Therefore the kings get obliged to do this, and the reason, of course, is that this is the general process by which society prospers. You have a balance so that we have a lot of punyas taking place, and therefore all the citizens get their material needs satisfied, and they make no protest, and they don't rebel, and they don't try to change the ruler, etc., because they're satisfied with the material things that they get. But along with that, then you can't just do karmakanda completely. One has to also, as an ideal king, include worship of the Lord. So within the sacrifices there is worship of the Lord, and of course these kings were also devotees, so therefore the system worked properly at that time. When parts of the system are done imperfectly, then we don't get the proper results, and the people of the world get dissatisfied with those rulers. Okay, any question? I think they're a little bit above, maybe they're upper Svarga or something like that. It describes them in the fifth canto, they're called the nakshatras, those stars or whatever. So the let's say the Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka, they're completely separate from that, from those stars, so probably above them. I'm not quite sure. I'll look. I think they're not, they're below.
So all the stars that you see are
Yeah. Oh, that's below. Bhuvarloka is below Svargaloka. That's quite close, just above us. A few hundred miles up here, Bhuvarloka. Which is not a physical thing, it's kind of a place where the ghosts and other things reside.
The Tengus really depend on the sacrifices. They seem to have
Why would it depend on little sacrifices that we do? Well, that's how it's described. That's their food, so to speak. But again, we understand that they're not completely dependent on us. But as a matter of duty, then they make sure that the human beings do their duties and they get the results and get satisfied by that somehow or other. But we can say that actually, even if they don't do it, they're not so concerned. But we see that, for instance, when Kamsa was there, he stopped the sacrifices. And then the Devatas complained to Brahma, look, he stopped our sacrifices. we want the results. So somehow they're attached to those results also. Or even Indra. Yeah, he said, well, look, the people of Vrindavan, Krishna stopped them doing the sacrifice to me. So, you know, he got angry at that. So they kind of expect it. So maybe that's a satisfaction, not so much physically, but just that their people are doing things properly, then they get the satisfaction that they're getting their dues or whatever. This, of course, also is, we can say, part of the system that the worship of the Devatas is there, and of course worship of Vishnu is there, to inculcate in the human being that he's not independent and he's taking things from this world and he has to admit that he is dependent on others, so therefore he has to show gratitude by offering a little bit back to everybody, you know. So the Devatas are responsible for the water and the sunlight and whatever, so we have to offer something back to show that, you know, we appreciate what they're doing for us.
Just wondering where what we consider UFOs, these entities, where would they...
which level are they on?
Where would they be coming from, below or...?
Satabuddha has a theory of that. He says some of them may be from lower places. Because of the descriptions we see, they don't look very Devata-like. They look like monstrous. So they maybe come from lower places. Or they could be coming from the Rakshasa area in the Bhuvarloka sphere also, because some of them look very malevolent. On the other hand, we do find stories that some of them are benevolent also. And in fact, it's maybe people's imagination or whatever, but these are the ones with the blonde hair and the blue eyes, the Nordic, so to speak, who are more like Devata persons, who are quite, benefic entities or whatever like that. So they seem more in the Devata sphere. So we get different types of these persons. Some are more like Rakshasic, demoniac persons, and some are more in the benefic, species or whatever like that. So probably from different sources, they're coming from different areas.
Quite often these
individuals
with these small bodies and big heads.
Oh, the graves.
Yeah, but whether that's based on reality or not. Because you do hear about people who have contact or even abducted.
Yeah. So those would say are the monolithic ones, or at least some of them may not be so monolithic or whatever, but at least they're not in the Deva sphere, the completely benefic ones. Because they look like they're desperate for something, and they depend on us for something or other. So there are species, maybe what you call different human-like species. All like we got 400,000 species of humans, so we got all sorts of entities that have all sorts of. They kind of look human, but they could be a little different. Could be smaller, or whatever like that, or bigger. So we have all sorts of types of human-like species. Not necessarily us, but they are living in different places. Of course, some could also live in these other varshas even. We don't know. They could have other entities in the other varshas as well. And then we have the ones in the lower planetary systems also. There is some that they call the Nagas in the UFO, the reptilians. Those are the bad ones. Yeah, reptilians. Who are they? The little ones?
The
Vidyatara. Oh, God. I don't know. As I say, they're all, you get all sorts of different entities around there. Yeah, and there's people pulling the chariot of the sun also around. Some of them are very small there.
They're often mentioned with the Sinaras and the Gandharvas and the Apsaras.
Yeah, and we have the Gandharvas apparently are like angels. And we have the Kimpurushas, which literally means, is he human? That's what it means, Kim Purusha. So they kind of look human, but maybe they're not human, kind of thing. You know? So, and we have a Kim Purusha Varsha, where the Kim Purushas live. It's near our Varsha. So they kind of look like us, but at the same time, maybe a little different, like a, maybe like elves or dwarfs or something like that.
Did you say that?
I think it is somewhere up there. It's not on that very high planet. It's not, because there's different levels like this. So they're on one level, maybe a little bit above Svargaloka. And then we have higher, like Mahaloka, Jananloka, Tapaloka, etc. above that.
We can't see them.
Hmm?
Because you said before that.
Well, we can even see the planetary systems, but we're not actually seeing, you know, like the sun is part of Svargaloka, the moon is part of Svargaloka, so we see the moon, obviously. But we can't see the heavenly activities there, or Indra, or the devatas that reside on that loka even, which is, you know, not so high up.
So regarding the moon, it tells us like two things. One thing is that the moon has its own light, like Kusha grass, very mild plains and very beautiful pleasant plains. In another chapter, I read Kalpa saying that actually the light of the moon is a reflection of the sun. So which one could we take that?
Well, we could say that maybe the sun is giving some light, and but then the moon also can regenerate that, so it becomes something different. So in other words, the moon is considered to have cooling light, whereas the sun has heating light, so it's a little bit different. So even if it takes the light of the sun, it transforms it, it becomes something different, and it's cooling. Yeah, with different effects.
Yeah. And I couldn't find anything. But there is a verse in the Bhagavatam which says the name of all the human and semi-humans, and it mentions the Satans. So I was just wondering how, I mean, if they are exactly the same as they describe in Christianity.
Oh, you mean the devil?
Yeah.
That devil. Satan. Yeah. Oh, okay. No, we don't have a concept like that, but we do have rakshasas and daikyas and things who are evil spirits. But we don't have, like, of course we say Kali personified is like that also in one sense. But we haven't got one person who's considered to be, you know, evil personified or something as opposed to good. So they're just particular jivas who are very tamasic, and of course they could transform also. So we don't have a fixed Satan type figure there. We could say maybe Tamagun is the that represents that idea of complete ignorance, but
so
nobody is permanently stuck in that position.
Will it be just symbolic, or?
Yeah, for us, we would say that was the equivalent in our literature for Satan would be the demon, so to speak. But they're not permanently fixed in that position. They could become devotees also, as we see Bali became a devotee or like that, so they can change also.
I was just wondering, are there any like beings that live on Mount Meru?
There are beings?
Beings that live on Mount Meru.
Well, it's described in Bhagavatam, on top of Mount Meru, there are cities. And for each of the deities of the directions, we have a deity for each direction. So they have a little city there. And then Brahma has a summer palace up there, one of his palaces up there on top of the Mount Meru also. So he comes down from Brahmaloka down to the top of Mount Meru sometimes. So there's entities up on top of Mount Meru also.
A little bit unfamiliar with some of the terms and concepts. So, the Earth sphere is has a Bhumandala. Does every planet have the same kind of organization, or is the material universe contained within our Bhumandala?
No. Bhumandala is one part of the material universe, the middle portion, and then we have upper portions, the Svarga, and upper portions all the way up to Brahmaloka. So we have all sorts of things within the material world that we can't even see those places, like Brahmaloka or whatever. It's there somewhere up at the top, but it's in very fine material elements. So, and then we have our central area like this, and below there is the hellish planets. And there's living entities in all these different spheres.
So does each planet, say Jupiter, Saturn, have the same organization, or is it contained within our...
Well, those planets are the Svarga sphere, the heavenly sphere. So they have devatas on them. So Jupiter has Brihaspati there also. And we have the moon planet with Indra and sun with Surya Dev, etc. So each planet has its particular type of devata and other persons there.
So we see like a shell of these planets?
We see a material remnant of it, but actually we don't see any persons living there on the sun, for instance. It's very hot. So the actual deity is much different. You know, he's not subject to getting burned or anything like that. Or the moon deity, Indra, is not living on some rocks or something. He's living in a huge palace somewhere, getting lots of sort of enjoyments. But we see rocks there instead. So we're just seeing some material aspect of it, but not the real aspect of the devatas.
So, for example, we see Jupiter as a gas planet.
Yeah.
Subtle beings.
Yeah, which we can't see. Yeah. So, yeah, they're also there, but we can't see them.
Okay. Hare Krishna.